Don't move, just leave your darn politics here on a tip. Lean back and stay a while now.
I'm Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor 67, your weekend companion for news, sports, music, and comedy. In 2 minutes, we'll hear an interview with glamorous Joan Fontaine, who'll tell us how she really feels about her sister, Olivia de Havilland. First, Monitor Music.
What good is sitting alone in your room?
Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet. Next, the real story behind the famous feud between Joan Fontaine and her sister Olivia de Havilland, as told to Monitor's Jack Eigen by Miss Fontaine herself.
For years we read that Joan Fontaine and her sister Olivia de Havilland do not dig one another. They
now,
do not. Is that
on? See what a bright press agent thought that up.
Was that right?
After all these years, you still bring it up. And my sister and my mother and I were living in Hollywood. Olivia was at Warner Brothers. And I was doing small parts, and they had nothing to write about it. So I think I might as well credit the Warner Brothers studio for thinking it up, because I don't think anybody on my side ever did. But it has remained, and it doesn't die. And we went dancing around nightclubs or taking marijuana or wearing miniskirts in those days, so they had nothing to say but this. But it is extraordinary. I don't think anybody could really name all the nice things one has heard about a lot of people. You only remember this kind of thing.
Well, you remember it, but I have no remember it where it was a vitriolic thing where you ever said unkind things about one
another. Oh, well, just... Olivia won the Academy Award one night, and I went backstage to shake hands, and somebody took a picture, and they said, oh, my goodness, Olivia was furious that Joan was there. Well, I had been invited there. I was given an award. But they instantly blew it up into an enormous thing the next day.
I think that was the difference, though, Joan Fontaine, about publicity of years ago as opposed to publicity today. For example, years ago, everything was a little bit mysterious. And I think there was an excitement to the business that we do not have today, because today you know everything you want to know about a star. You know what time she gets up, where she has lunch, where she buys her clothes, whether she's wearing a wig, whether she's not wearing a wig, whether he's bald or whether he's not. Isn't that... We know too much now, I think.
I was terribly pleased, really, that Elizabeth Taylor said what she did. She didn't go to the award. And a lot of people thought she should have gone to the academy. And when she said no, we've made a pact not to leave each other. I think that's the most marvelous thing. That stops any criticism, that stops scandal immediately. She's very bright to do that. Also, I think it is very good for a marriage. I think marriage is almost impossible if you are separated a great deal of the time. And I hope the Britons aren't going to do that.
Do you think marriage, a happy marriage, is possible in show business? Now, you could name maybe 5, 6, or 10 people, but don't you think it is tougher to be married in show business than in any other business?
For a number of reasons. I don't think it has anything to do with the people, really. But when Elizabeth Taylor, let's say, wins 2 Academy Awards and Britain hasn't ever won one, Britain has to be a pretty strong character. He's got to know he's good, and of course he's good. Not to resent that. Those are the things that begin, like the dripping water. I noticed that Jessica Tandy was not up for an award. Hume Cronyn was for the Tony. Those things will begin to create a small schism between the couple, and they have to be very intelligent to withstand that, and they have to know exactly what they're doing.
Had you not become an actress, Joan, what do you think you would have done?
I'd have made a pretty good plumber.
Well, had you had any ambition prior to acting?
Well, my mother was Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and she started Olivia and Me very, very young on Shakespeare and Renaissance plays and Reformation plays and things like that. And I think that's really the only thing that Olivia and I could do is, well, we hopefully act, but I think we're probably better than that than we would have been librarians or teachers or whatever it happens to be. What else girls would do?
Well, personally, I love to read, but I am very glad that Joan Fontaine did not become a librarian.
Time alone will tell. My love for you will never end, although I know that you must go. Fate that let us meet was indiscreet to let me fall in love with you. Time may change the world, but I could never change the world we used to know. I love you so. Time alone will tell. For no one else could be as wonderful as you. I'll go on so lonely now, but losers must go on somehow. Time alone will tell. You'll always be my one and only love. La 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 la. Piangerò, ma in qualche modo bene o male tu vedrai, mi arrangerò, anche se mai più sarò felice come quando c'eri tu.
Time alone will tell. You're tuned to Monitor at 17 minutes after the hour, if that tells you anything. Mel Allen with the latest sports in 5 minutes. Stay with us right here on the Monitor Beacon. This is Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor 67. To lead off this quarter hour is Nancy Ames with My Storybook.
my story starts happily. Boy meets girl, soon a wonderful affair's begun. Lots of loving every night, perfect fair we never find, and that's the end.
One moment, Mel Allen reports on sports and looks at the week ahead. Monitor Sports is brought to you by Excedrin, the extra strength pain reliever.
Excedrin headache number 24. What's for dinner?
We've had liver so many times in the last month that
Aren't you going to eat your liver?
Negative. I'm not going to eat it. Zero liver is going into my mouth.
Liver is good for you. With liver, you can live.
I'm going to live without...
With liver.
I'm going to risk my life by not eating liver for 3 days.
If you're not, like, strong and healthy, what do I need you for, right?
Well, I've been strong and healthy. You don't see me collapsing and falling down and...
You will be.
Somebody has to take a stand on this thing, and I'd rather stand on it than eat it. I'm just not going to take this liver. I look in the mirror, I see liver. I look like liver.
Oh, that's funny.
Uh-oh. What are you taking that little bottle of aspirin for?
This is not aspirin, it's Excedrin.
You have a headache, huh?
I don't have just a headache. You've given me an Excedrin headache.
Oh, life is full of Excedrin headaches. That's why you should get a bottle full of Excedrin tablets, each 50% stronger than an aspirin tablet for relief of headache pain. So if you get Excedrin headaches, why take anything less?
I'll put in my mouth like a Strasburg goose, and I'll eat liver.
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Brad. Hello there, everybody. The University of Illinois was further penalized today for operating an illegal slush fund, this time by the NCAA. A 2-year probation. No football bowl games, no championship basketball tournaments, no football television appearances. Although the Illini can appear twice on TV this fall because the commitments had previously been made. The NCAA probation follows the Big Ten-induced ouster of 3 Illini coaches for their role in obtaining illegal financial aid for athletes from the slush fund. Now let's look at the Monitor scoreboard in baseball, the American League. Boston snapped Minnesota's 4-game winning streak and its own 4-game losing streak by beating Minnesota 9-6. Dan Osinski bested Jim Perry. Both were in relief. Harmon Killebrew homered for Minnesota. Jim McLaughlin pitched a two-hitter as California turned back Washington and Pete Rickert 5-0. Jim Fregosi and Bobby Knopp homering for California. Detroit beat Baltimore for the sixth straight time. The score 4-0. Joe Sparmer pitched a three-hitter. Dave McNally was the loser. And by the way, he was also ejected from the game in the fifth inning for protesting an umpire's call. And in the first game of doubleheader, Kansas City beat the New York Yankees 4-1, Jim Nash beating Whitey Ford. Chicago-Cleveland rained out. Over in the National League, it was Atlanta 5, Cincinnati 3, Pat Jarvis the winner, Jim Maloney the losing pitcher, home runs Pete Rose and Tony Perez for the Reds. Chicago topped St. Louis 5-4, Rich Nye the winner, Bob Gibson the loser. Home runs for Chicago, Ernie Banks, for St. Louis, Mike Shannon, and Orlando Cepeda. It was Cepeda's third in 2 days and his fifth of the season. Everything else in the National League rained out. Princeton University tapped Lehigh's Bob Carroll as its new basketball coach, replacing Bill Van Bredekoff, who recently resigned to become coach of the professional Los Angeles Lakers. Carroll was a star player under Van Bredekoff at Lafayette 15 years ago and takes over a Princeton team that was ranked fifth in the nation last season. Automobile racing, 32-year-old Italian auto racing ace Lorenzo Bandini listed in critical condition after crashing his Ferrari into a lamppost in the Grand Prix of Monaco. Bandini underwent a 4-hour operation for multiple injuries. Additional details later tonight on Ted Webb's Sport of Speed. In the Houston Champions International Golf Tournament, Frank Beard dropped an 18-foot birdie putt on the 76th hole to beat Arnie Palmer by one stroke. Beard fired a 67 for a four-round score of 274, 10 under par. Defending champion Palmer came in with a par 71 for his 275. Tied for third at 278, Ben Hogan and Charlie Coody. In the National Professional Soccer League, St. Louis down Chicago 2-1. Looking ahead, tomorrow, the world's number 2 and 4 light heavyweight contenders, Bob Foster and Eddie Cotton, get together in Washington. Thursday, it's the Greater New Orleans Open Golf Tournament. Saturday, that'll be a big day in the world of sports. The start of qualifying runs at the Indianapolis Speedway for the 500. The Eastern Sprint Rowing Championships at Worcester, Massachusetts. The Fresno Relays. The Withers Stakes at Aqueduct. And the Debonair Stakes at Hollywood Park. And at Roosevelt Raceway, the world's richest harness race, the Messenger Stakes. And next Sunday, the National AAU Senior 35-kilometer walk at Kings Point, Long Island, and the Targo Florio Auto Race at Palermo, Sicily. That's what is and will be in sports, Brad. Mel Allen here, friends, reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Thank you, Mel. your pardon. You're tuned to Monitor, the best sound around for your weekend listening enjoyment, no matter where you are, at home or in your car, anywhere in the USA. In Roanoke, Virginia, we're heard on station WSLS. Right now, let's step aside for a word from all our NBC stations, and then more of Monitor 67.
Monitor's world of information, available anywhere in the nation on the NBC Radio Network.
Brad Crandall here, continuing with more of Monitor 67. Just ahead, we'll hear Vice President Hubert Humphrey explain what you and I can do to help a needy child go to a summer camp this year. First, Monitor music. From the team of Sinatra and Sinatra, Frank and Nancy, that is, with their current big bestseller, Something Stupid.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
A child, going to summer camp is the high point of his whole year, but for many thousands of children in the United States, this opportunity never comes because their families can't afford it. But this year, large numbers of needy children will get a chance to go to camp if the plans of Vice President Hubert Humphrey work out. Reporter Nancy Dickerson talked with Mr. Humphrey and with Mr. Ernest Schmidt of the American Camping Association about how this can be done and what all of us can do to help.
Admittedly, camping is a good thing. It's like motherhood. Nobody's against it. But the problem is, how do you get the children, the most needy children, into the camps in America? You're going to work on that this summer, aren't you, Mr. Vice President?
Well, that's supposed to be one of my responsibilities as the chairman of the President's Committee on Youth Opportunities. What we're seeking to do is to encourage every citizen in this country that is a little better off than some of his other neighbors to do something for the other fellow. In other words, share your summer. And share your summer in camping means that you can help a needy boy or girl, and there are needy boys and girls in almost every community in America. You can help that boy or girl go to camp and get a wonderful outdoor experience and training and guidance and leadership training, health experience and experience in outdoor adventure. How do you do it? Well, every major city and most every community has a United Givers Fund or a welfare council And surely it has a mayor and a local government.
But, Mr. Vice President, are they all set up, ready to go for the summer camping program? For instance, could you just get on the phone and dial the United Givers Fund and say, see here, I want to do something about camps?
Yes, indeed. We find that about 15 to 20% of the camp facilities were vacant last year, so there are what you might call vacant cots, vacant facilities, ready to go. There is, the facilities are there. And the United Givers Fund, for example, in any community, knows who the needy youngsters are, knows where the camps are, knows how to contact the camp. What they also know is they don't have enough money to do all of this. So what you need to do, and I say you, I mean the citizen needs to do, is to share his summer by possibly sending along a check to the United Givers Fund and earmarking it and say, I want this check to go for a camping experience for a needy boy and girl. You find the boy or girl, get him off to that camp. Here's $50, here's $25, or whatever you can send, $1, $5, whatever it may be. And if you can't find a United Givers Fund listed in your telephone directory, call up the mayor and say, Mr. Mayor, do you have a youth opportunity council? The Vice President of the United States said you're supposed to have one. And if you don't have one, Mr. Mayor, will you please organize one? And when you organize one, will you tell us who's the head of it? And we'll send you some assistance to help a needy boy or girl go to camp.
How about the camps, Mr. Schmidt? As an executive director of the American Camping Association, how are your people reacting to this proposal?
Wonderfully well. I think that many of us who are parents have had the experience of having a child come back from camp all sunburned and just bursting with what they've had there. This thing of getting more kids to camp is something we've always wanted, and I think it's a wonderful thing that President Johnson and Vice President Humphrey are doing. I think that the leadership they're furnishing with private enterprise, private funds working in this thing. I think it's exactly right. Our camps are going to be delighted to welcome these children. We realize there'll be problems, but on the other hand, we see them as opportunities.
How many needy children do you think the Camps of America could accommodate this summer?
This would be difficult to pinpoint exactly, but I think that, well, I think of one young man I talked to the other day, a camp director of a boys' club camp out in the Midwest. He said, I've got room for 500 more boys in my camp this next summer. Well, that was just one camp, and there are about 11,000 camps in our country.
Well, Mr. Smith, isn't it also true that the camping program works all summer so that if you had, let's say, 100 vacant cots, you might be able to use those 100 about five or six times during the summer, you see, so you get multiple use. They'll have proper food. They'll have supervised recreation. They'll learn group activity, individual responsibility. They'll have a chance to be a leader at some level of activity. And they'll come back a changed, at least a better person.
You know, one thing I keep thinking about, practical problems. As a mother, I once sent three children to camp, and in the camp instructions were send a dozen pair of white socks with each child. Now, that's 24 socks for each child, 24 times three, and each of them had to have name tags. Now, that's 72 name tags. This is just one problem. How are you going to do about these needy children who don't have these uniforms or these fancy clothes at some of the camps
today? We're not going to worry about those uniforms or the fancy clothes. We are going to worry about basic things like enough blankets to keep that child warm at night, the right kind of food, medical care. These are basics. The clothing, well, it would be nice to have, but it is most certainly not essential.
We're speaking now of the public camps and the camps that are not really as fancy as some of the private camps. We all like to go to the better camp if you can. But for a youngster that's never had a camping experience, as an old scoutmaster, may I say, just turn the kids loose. Give them some supervised control or recreation. Give them good food. Give them activity. And they won't worry too much about socks, and they won't worry too much about how they look. As a matter of fact, they'll be running around about as close to being naked as you can get them without having them running completely loose.
Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Mr. Ernest Schmidt of the American Camping Association with a worthy project for us all. Help send a needy child to camp. Now here's Petula Clark with a touch of possessive pride to sing This Is My Song. This is Monitor 67 at 14 minutes before the hour, with everything that's current on the weekend scene, including, just ahead, a warning from Dr. Joyce Brothers on the hidden dangers of using amphetamines, the so-called diet drugs. Stay tuned. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Monitor, Brad Crandall on this end, starting off this segment with a gentleman who's made quite a comeback this season, Frankie Lane with Making Memories.
Your Mother's Day flowers from your FTD florist yet? What kind of an offspring are you?
Here are the Sandpipers of Guantanamera fame with their latest for Baby.
I'll walk in the rain white sun. I'll play into the warmth of your tiny hand. I'll do you.
If you're on a diet and it involves the use of a supplemental drug, it may be well to take a cautious second look at your weight-losing program. True, it's dangerous to be overweight, but it may be even more dangerous to lose weight at the expense of becoming dependent on the drug that helped you do it. Psychologist Dr. Joyce Brothers examined some of the pitfalls of the use of these drugs.
Who is turned on? The hippies? No, the housewives. They're hooked on bennies, sometimes known as cartwheels, but not by them. They don't even know they're hooked, and they'd be more than surprised to hear that the diet pills they take daily are also used by the beatniks to get kicks. Yet many of these proper suburban housewives who deplore drug addiction among modern youth are suffering from an amphetamine dependency, and may one day find that they're unable to kick the habit. Amphetamine is a powerful drug prescribed by doctors to counteract exhaustion and depression, and sometimes as an appetite suppressant for patients who need to lose weight. Like any drug, it can be beneficial when its use is medically supervised. Many of the women taking the pills are getting them from neighbors, not doctors, and they're taking them like candy to keep themselves from eating candy. In so doing, they're risking permanent organic damage to the brain, according to Dr. Frederick Lemaire, a psychiatry professor from the University of Washington School of Medicine in Seattle. Dr. Lemaire cites Japan's experience with amphetamine. There, the pills were freely available until widespread addiction forced the government to regulate distribution. By that time, there were over 200,000 amphetamine addicts in the country. A study of 131 who had to be hospitalized as mentally ill showed that one half recovered within 6 months. 14 had not recovered 15 years later. Obviously, the drug that makes diet pills effective is not harmless. Doctors prescribing amphetamines are aware of the dangers and watch for adverse side effects. These may include nervousness, restlessness, irritability, aggressiveness, violence, insomnia, and emotional instability. The dieter taking the pills may experience any or all of these without realizing it. Psychoanalyst Dr. Leslie Farber, studying the effect of amphetamine on himself and others, found that the pill deadened important imaginative capacities, which reduced the user's ability to judge himself or those around him. For these reasons, a mother attuned to the exaggerated tempo of the drug is quite capable of nagging and driving a family mercilessly until her drug addiction causes one of them to break down. Then she may find that giving up the drug is all but impossible. Withdrawal can cause depression, fatigue, and even suicide. Is getting into a dress one size smaller really worth it? This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
A serious look at the dangers of the diet drugs. And now, a message meant for you. Are you high-spirited? Now there's an exciting drink to match your champagne mood. Sparkling Champale. C-H-A-M-P-A-L-E. Like nothing else you ever tasted except champagne. Champale puts more sparkle in any get-together. Buy Sparkling Champale wherever beer is sold. Costs just pennies more. Sparkling Champale Malt Liquor. Metropolis Brewery, Trenton, New Jersey. Williams. This is Monitor 67, yours for pleasant weekend listening, and I'm your host, Brad Crandall, with a reminder that NBC News on the Hour is just ahead, after which, guess what? We'll be right back.
This is your NBC Monitor. This is your NBC Monitor.